are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with Tony East from Locked On Pacers to take a look at how the Indiana Pacers have fared in the early part of the season relative to expectations coming into this year. Tyrese Haliburton leading the NBA in assists per game. What more does he need to add to his game to take that next step as a player? And Benedict Mathurin coming off the bench, making a huge impression early in his NBA career. Then we chat with David Locke from Locked On Jazz, as the Utah Jazz were at the top of the Western Conference standings, but have had a recent four-game skid that directly coincides with the absence of Mike Conley from their lineup. How has Will Hardy gotten the most out of this group of guys? Lauri Markkanen's impact so far this season. And then lastly, as the host of Locked On Rockets, I'll be discussing Jabari Smith Jr.'s slow start to his NBA career, how he's starting to turn the corner in these recent last five or six games or so, how things are starting to look different and kind of coming together for him as an NBA player. Plus, Jalen Green adding playmaking to his bag, making him one of the most deadly offensive players in the association. As always, we appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. We are free and available on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. Joining us now is Tony East from Locked On Pacers. You can follow on Twitter at TEastNBA. Tony, the Pacers were 8-2 across their last 10 games, and they could have maybe kept that up had they not allowed Ivica Zubac of all players to go prime Wilt Chamberlain in their most recent game. 29 recorded rebounds. We're going to talk about the Pacers here in a second, but what happened there?
My goodness, I have no idea. The Pacers, I thought before the season, would not be a good rebounding team, and they have been better than I thought, but this game sort of showed why. Clippers had 74 rebounds as a team with Zubac having 29 of them. Miles Turner, for all the great things he's done this year, not a good rebounder. Their best rebounder is Jalen Smith, who is streaky and inconsistent. And Zubac said, screw this, I'm just going to win this game by myself, and grabbed every single Clippers miss it felt like in this game.
Well, the Pacers, you know, minus this most recent little kerfluffle, whatever we'll call it, against the Clippers, the still PG and Kawhi-less Clippers, if you will. I mean, the Pacers have kind of maybe exceeded expectations a little bit. Is that a fair assessment for kind of where they're at right now, Tony?
I would say so. You know, I had them going through the schedule before the season right now at, I think, 7 wins, and they're at 11. They're over 500, but it's not the raw number of wins, I think, that's showing they're exceeding expectations. It's that, one, they're beating very good teams. They beat New Orleans in this run. They've beaten the Nets twice. You know, they've beaten Toronto in there. You know, they've done really well in the month of November, but and their style has been so impressive. They're top 10 in offense. Tyrese Haliburton is 2 full assists per game ahead of the next guy because he's just throwing it to everyone wide open all the time. And teams literally go zone the second he checks out of the game because his offensive impact is so strong. So I think it's not that they've necessarily won or lost more than everybody thought. It's that they're playing this style that is fun and extremely sustainable, where they have one of the best offensive threats in the league on their team.
Yeah, I mean, we talked before the season about Tyrese Haliburton. His just, you know, he's got this like superstar potential about him because he's a guy that, you know, like you said, leading the NBA by 2 full assists per game at 11.1 per contest, to go along with he's on, you know, a hair under 20 points per night, nearing kind of flirting with that 50-40-90 club, you know, a few percentage points here and there, a couple shots here and there, and he's pretty much right at that point. You know, some really impressive efficiency from him. I mean, has his production to this point of the season kind of, you know, matched or maybe even exceeded your expectations for where he should be at this year?
Yeah, the big thing for me with him coming into the season and how he needed to take a step forward was being more aggressive, right? Last year, he'd have these games with 12 points and 10 assists. You know, the assists are awesome. They're guiding the Pacers offense, but 12 points means guys kind of sag off or kind of let him pass at times. And he would say after the game, Tyrese Haliburton is such a perfectionist. He would say something to the effect of, you know, I wasn't aggressive enough. You know, I was too passive. I let the defense play me a certain way. So all offseason, he worked on that, finding his shot within the flow of the offense in a way that can still let him be the brilliant passer that he is, but also lets him find his shots. And I thought that that would be more of a slow increase in skill for him and why I thought the Pacers would be much better next year than this year. But he's really figured it out right away, which is why he's just shy of 20 points per game already on that crazy efficiency because he can pull up from anywhere. So it's hard to sag off of him, but he's added a driving game. He's added the shot that some in Indy have coined the tie hook, where it's kind of like a hook shot on the run that he takes. It's kind of weird. It only goes in sometimes, but it's cool and new. And so he's got his own offensive repertoire that he didn't have before on top of the passing. It didn't take away from what he was already really good at. And so maybe it's just my own schedule, but he's kind of ahead of schedule in his development that he became the scorer and passer at the same time already. And I don't see any way that this just goes away. So for the Pacers, they've got a guy or one of their guys of their rebuild because he's already there. He's only 22.
Well, it's still early in his career. They might have another guy who's just part of their rebuild in Benedict Mathurin, who's just been so impressive to start his NBA career. He's coming off the bench, right? Averaging right at, you know, basically 20 points per night off the bench, 60% true shooting. He's doing this as a rookie. Just how impressed with his start to his career have you been?
Yeah, he's insane. He just, we recording this after the Clippers game was unfortunate because it was just the second time all season he's been below 10 points, and rookies can be so shaky. You know, they can have these big games and then drop right back to a bad one, depending on the coverage or whatever is going on. But Mathurin has been so consistent, way ahead of rookie consistency, which has been a big part of why he's been so good. But the biggest thing and why his true shooting percentage is ridiculous is he gets to the line a million times a game, no matter who the opponent is. And that is so rare for a rookie, right? That's what's you saw this. You cover the Rockets, right? He had eight free throw attempts in that game against Houston as the Pacers made this crazy comeback after I think they scored like 8-10 points in the first quarter of that game. You know, he was huge in that game, right? And he does that all the time. And I you know, the funniest story about him to me is they had their scrimmages before training camp, and Tyrese Haliburton said that Mathurin was complaining in these scrimmages all the time, like for calls. And Tyrese said, "Ben, you're a rookie. You're not going to get these foul calls in the NBA." But he has. He's been able to get into the teeth of the defense and get these foul calls as a rookie. And that's why, you know, even on nights where his shot's off, he gets a bunch of points because he gets the free throws. But he also has a bunch of nights where his shot is on. And that's why he's been so special and such a good scorer in his first year.
Yeah, kind of having that ability as a rookie is such a boon, because rookies often, you know, that's part of like maybe you just roll that in with the rest of the rookie wall is just like there, you know, at some point you're just like looking around like, where are the foul calls, man?
Right.
And you
right.
usually start to get that respect in the second year, but getting it as a rookie is just, it's a very unique situation. How much of his success do you maybe attribute to Rick Carlisle's decision to have him come off the bench?
I think that's a big part of it. You know, that's a big topic of discussion, obviously, when you have a 20 points per game score coming off the bench as a rookie, should he start? And Rick has always said, you know, why? Why would we start this guy? Because the starting lineup as constructed has Buddy Hield, who's a scorer and in the same role, right? Haliburton, who's going to start at the point guard spot. And then they play a defensive-minded guy at the three, whether that's Aaron Nesmith, Chris Duarte, Andrew Nembhard. Basically, it's just been whoever's healthy. This is too long of an explanation, but what I'm trying to get at is with the second unit, he goes against matchups that he can more easily control. He still plays a ton with Tyrese Haliburton. He gets, you know, better situations for him to have the ball because with the second unit, they don't have as many options who require touches. And he still closes games and he's still playing with the starters all the time. You know, to Rick's point, it's like, what's the point? What is the value the Pacers get by having him start when it takes away something else that's made this team surprising and good? So, yes, I think at some point, you know, no, it's not a secret. You know, Buddy Hield's been on the trade rumors for forever at this point. Maybe he's dealt and that opens up a starting spot. Maybe Mathurin passes someone on the defensive side of the ball and starts. But right now, he's playing great. His stats look awesome. The Pacers are winning. Why change it? You know, there's really no point for the Pacers outside of at some point playing him and Haliburton like a million minutes per game together.
The point for the Pacers is to appease Pacers fans who are upset that right. Mathurin isn't starting. That's the only point that you can come up with that even holds any weight whatsoever. Is there a world, Tony? I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about, but right, you know, Paolo Banchero missing some time due to injury, maybe there's a world, right? I think right now you're looking at 1A, 1B in the rookie of the year competition between Paolo and Benedict Mathurin. But at the same time, like, is there a world where Mathurin could be at the very least, maybe like a finalist for both rookie of the year and sixth man of the year if he keeps up this production?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, Wob put it out there for the first time, but like Ben Gordon as a rookie won sixth man of the year, but not rookie of the year, right? So no one's ever won both. Mathurin's got to be in the mix for both. And it's going to be the same discussion it always is for a lot of these big awards where, yeah, per game, Banchero's better. You know, I don't think that's a secret, but he's only played 12 games. Mathurin's played 20 now after this Clippers game that just happened. Like, he's going to be in the mix for both, especially if he can maintain around 20 points per game all season with a dynamic role. I mean, no one's figured out the answer to stop him. He's so good at adjusting in games. And I believe this was true coming into today, although he just had 9 points. No one is averaging more points coming off the bench as well. So, you know, that's typically what sixth man of the year is. I believe that is still the case. Someone was hot on his tail. Christian Wood with Dallas was hot on his tail recently. But, it's hard for me to think that if the way that's the award's going to be voted and he outpaces Boncaro in games, yeah, he's got a great shot at both, which is crazy to think about.
Last thing for you here, Tony, before we let you go. What's the timetable on Chris Duarte? When can we expect to see him back on the floor?
Great question. Yeah, he was a big story for this team, too. Like, he made an all-rookie team last year, and everybody forgets that he's a piece for this young team because of how good Mathurin and Halliburton have been. It sounds like the latest is that he could return on this road trip the Pacers are currently on, which sounds nice, but their road trip is so long, 7 games in a row, the longest road trip for the Pacers since 1986. So that's a long range of time a player could return their first game. If that was today, it goes through the next 11 or 12 days through December 9th. So all that to say, while Duarte was struggling, he is a key piece for this young team, and he should be back in the next week or week and a half.
Can Tyrese Halliburton keep his production up and start to take that next leap, that next step into stardom? Is Benedict Mathurin going to be in the talk for not one, but two awards as the season continues on? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Pacers. Tony, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me, Jackson.
Coming up, the Jazz were at the top of the Western Conference standings for a moment there, have since slipped, currently on a 4-game losing streak. Just how important is Mike Conley to what Utah is trying to achieve? How has Will Hardy gotten the most out of this group of guys? Lauri Markkanen looking fantastic in a Jazz jersey. We're going to get there, but first, today's episode is brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion you can imagine, or budget for that matter, across the US, UK, Canada, and Australia. Book a spacious SUV or a minivan for a family road trip. Get a classic or luxury car for a special event, birthday, or even a holiday. Find affordable economy cars if you're on a budget and just need to get from point A to point B. You can even test drive that new electric vehicle that you've had your eye on to see how it fits your everyday lifestyle. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to your doorstep. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring rental cars. Find your drive at Turo.com. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday, as always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen today. For your second listen, go check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Joining us now is the host of Locked On Jazz, David Locke himself. You can follow on Twitter at DLock09. Now, look, the Utah Jazz started out the season incredibly hot, or at one point at the top of the Western Conference, have since cooled off a little bit. Now owners of, unfortunately, a 4-game losing streak that directly coincides with the absence of Mike Conley from the lineup. So, David, let's start there. Just how much does this 4-game skid here kind of highlight the importance of Conley to the fabric of this Jazz team?
I mean, I've said the whole time that Mike Conley is the thread holding the fabric together. That's been kind of the line of the way I would think about it. There's a bunch of these pieces, and the pieces are actually much better than everyone thought, but there was some thread that was making them suddenly become a quilt, if you will. And without Mike Conley, it's abundantly clear that they lack it. Now, would have they won these games? Oh, I'm not, that's a hard one to tell, but there have been specific plays in each and every game that you can zero in on that swung the game, where had Mike Conley been in the game, the plays would have been done differently. They also did, in fairness to the guys that are playing, I think the three best teams we'll see over time, and obviously the Clippers are a shadow of themselves without Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, are the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Suns. So this weekend, the Jazz went to Golden State and to Phoenix and played both those teams really tight and in really good games, and played really well in both those games. So I think there's still a whole lot of positives going on here, more than people anticipated, but certainly the piece of Mike Conley missing is the difference between them having chances to win these games and they're falling short.
I mean, Will Hardy's been getting a lot out of this group of guys. How have you seen him kind of adjusting things without Conley over these last 4 games?
Well, the two signatures I'd say to Will Hardy so far, one is that fun is underrated in the NBA. He says that an awful lot. Like, this is your life dream to be here, and it's my life dream to coach here. And all of us so Let's have some fun. Fun is underrated in the NBA. I think it's an interesting perspective. I think it's a youthful perspective. And I think he's right. I've seen in my 30 plus years in this league, I've seen just so many players, you know, kind of almost run down by the league and the pressures of it. The second one is a flexibility in how he manages the team. So last night, Nikhil Alexander Walker got a bunch of time. And then earlier this year, Talen Horton Tucker got a bunch of time. And he's closed games with Colin Sexton without Colin Sexton. He's closed games with Malik Beasley without Malik Beasley. And sometimes it's Jared Vanderbilt and sometimes it's Kelly Olynyk. And that's become the signature of this team, is that they have a legitimate 9, 10, 11 rotation players who can play. And then he's working them to see who matches on that given night and who closes in that given night. And they've had a lot of success in close games.
And fun leads you to a top five offense in the NBA, clearly. So maybe some other teams should try that approach as well. Jordan Clarkson, averaging a career best 4.7 assists per game. How has he been able to kind of evolve as a playmaker this season in Will Hardy's system?
Well, that's the perfect word, Jackson. He has evolved. Since I think the book on Jordan was you might go 2 weeks without five assists, and now you're getting five assists a game. He's actually the best point guard on the roster right now without Mike Conley, which also says something about how much we miss Mike Conley. But Jordan is a chameleon as a person as well. And what Will talks a lot about is just incredibly high basketball IQ. And we're seeing that. He's just kind of rolled into a different role. Under Quinn, he was a sixth man of the year, and he was coming off and he was taking, 16 shots in 27 minutes and letting it fly. And now he's up to 32 minutes and he's really finding guys and playing point guard and then reading games beautifully. There was a play late in the game against Phoenix a week ago in which he had scored on the possession before, but he comes around the curl and points to Mike Conley to go to Lauri Markkanen because Markkanen's got a mismatch on campaign. And then the next night, Mike Conley goes out and Jordan Clarkson takes over the game in the final 3 minutes, scoring three straight times against Portland. So he's reading the game, what has to happen. He's showing an array of skills, both unselfish and the ability to still be this great isolation player. And then his ballerina-esque footwork down low makes him slithery and unable to be stopped when he starts pivoting around and always finds a way to scoop that thing up and in.
You mentioned his name there a moment ago, David. Lauri Markkanen has taken a pretty significant leap this season, going from, averaging just under 15 a game last year to almost 22 a game this season. We kind of saw a glimpse of that, this past offseason in his play with, overseas in Eurobasket. How impressed with his production have you been to this point in the season?
I'm wowed by him. I'm wowed by his all sorts of stuff. So first, his pure size, frankly. Just being around him. I mean, this dude is a legit 7 foot, 240 pounds. He is mammoth. Then the array of skills with that 7-footer. I mean, he can, takes a hit to step back three last night. 7 feet hitting a step back three. The amount of guys that can do that gets pretty slim in the world. Then you start just adding in the fact that he, is able to play a power game because he is 240 pounds and drive it up and hook it with his right or his left at times. He's shooting 62% on twos this year. He's a 36% three-point shooter, which is league average, but when you're 7 feet tall, that's a pretty neat thing to have. And then he's just learning what this burden is night in and night out of being the guy. And I think that's been what's most interesting to watch, is him trying to figure out how on a nightly basis he can handle this responsibility of being the guy. And I've seen him wear down. He wasn't particularly strong against Detroit. He was 4 of 13. He was 4 of 13 again last night. But there's other nights, where he's just been completely a force. And don't misunderstand this, because I understand I'm talking about one of the greatest offensive players in the game ever. He really has a kind of an Anthony Davis and then Kevin Durant skill set. He's just not quite as good as those two. But when you think about 7-footers that can do what Lauri Markkanen can do, that's what you're talking about. And there aren't many of them in this world.
I guess I can see that. I understand why you had to kind of like temper the take there a little bit before saying it. But I guess I can see that comparison as far as, the skill sets go. But David, last thing for you here, what is your best way to kind of describe the Utah Jazz, the iteration of the Utah Jazz this season, right? Because I still kind of don't have a sense of what the goal is, right? Are they playing hopefuls? Is this just kind of a showcasing of all these pieces? You look at the team, right? And it's like you took the Timberwolves and the Cavs and threw them at the wall, and now it's this year's Utah Jazz. So what's the plan for this team?
I think if you look at Danny Ainge pretty consistently in his history in Boston. We have the nice thing about Ainge is we have a long track record to look at, right? He does these rebuilds, which he's now done to the level of two NBA finals team and maybe even a championship team as Boston, this version of Boston looks like the best team in the NBA. He does this and then, but he doesn't do it in the way you've seen some people where once they've traded one guy, they then just dump the rest, right? Oh, we're going to go into rebuild and we're going to make a move. And now let us move this guy. Now let's make the next three moves. The last two moves that he made were actually to make the team better. They fleeced the Lakers. Talen Horton-Tucker for Patrick Beverley is a fleece. Talen Horton-Tucker is a much better player than Patrick Beverley at this point. And then the Bojan Bogdanović-Kelly Olynyk trade not only saved the Jazz $8 million and set them up for future deals, but was a deal that allowed the Jazz to play basketball. I mean, that's literally what Danny said to me. He's like, hey, you know, if we don't have Kelly Olynyk on this roster, we actually don't have, we can't play. So there was, in those two moves, the last two moves he made, what showed me is he was actually trying to still build a basketball team in the midst of this. The trades for Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert were such outrageous hauls. I don't think you had a choice but to make them. Even if you didn't plan to rebuild, if someone offered you five first-round draft picks, three of them unprotected and one of them being Walker Kessler, I think you have to take it. I think if someone offers you four first-round draft picks for Donovan Mitchell, three of them unprotected and one of them being Ochai Agbaji from the current draft, I think you have to take it. There has clearly not been that same offer for Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, or whatever it might be that Danny Ainge thinks is good for the franchise. I do believe that if that offer came across right now, that the goal and the mindset of the franchise is still a 36 to 48 month window. And so you're not trying to necessarily win a championship this season. And therefore, if somebody comes calling for any of the pieces, and they have about 11 of them that could help someone win games, I do think if the deal is right, or maybe even if the deal is one-sided toward the Jazz, Danny Ainge will pull the trigger on those.
All right, and I did lie there a moment ago, David, because I did have one more thing for you. What's the latest timetable on Mike Conley? When can we expect him to return?
It's not entirely clear. There was a report that's 2 weeks, but that was kind of dismissed as saying he's kind of on a more of a kind of a day-to-day, but, you know, just a progressing timeline. Last game he played was on the 19th, so we're at about 10 days by the time the Jazz play again. I don't think you'll see him too soon, but hopefully soon. I mean, I think it's a big piece for the Jazz. It's not surprising to me that, you know, they did beat Memphis this year earlier by one without Mike Conley. So in five games without Mike this year, they're one and four. That's not a stunner to me. Ja Morant did not play in that game for Memphis either, but it is a necessity if the Jazz are going to try to win games to have Mike Conley on the floor.
How will the Utah Jazz continue to navigate their season without Mike Conley leading them throughout? Will they be wheeling and dealing, guys, ahead of this year's NBA trade deadline? Of course, you will have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Jazz. David, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
My pleasure. Great job on the show. I catch it every Monday.
Coming up, why was Jabari Smith Jr. struggling so much to start his NBA career with the Houston Rockets? How are things starting to finally come together for him over this last stretch of about five or six games? Plus, Jalen Green adding playmaking to his bag much earlier than anticipated and how that's making him an even more deadly offensive weapon. We're going to get there, but first, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Tonight, I'm taking Luka Doncic to score more than 26.5 points. How about LeBron James to have more than 7.5 rebounds? Or maybe Kevin Durant to have less than 6.5 assists? And what about Steph Curry, more than 3.5 three-pointers made? So what is Prize Picks, right? How does it work? Basically, you pick 2 to 6 players, and if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projections, you can win up to 25 times back on your money on any entry that you submit. There's no competing against other people. It's just you versus the projections available. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch. That's NBA, NFL, NHL, PGA, you name it, they've got you covered for it over at PrizePicks. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that simple. Download the PrizePicks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code Locked On. If you deposit $100, PrizePicks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, PrizePicks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code Locked On at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. Just a quick reminder, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. Also on YouTube, just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And now it's me, Jackson Gatlin, host of Locked On Rockets. You can follow on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Let's talk about Jabari Smith Jr. and his struggles to start his NBA career. Look, this was the number three overall pick in this last year's draft. For much of the pre-draft cycle, the guy that was mocked consensus number one across many, many draft boards. And he really didn't kind of live up to many of the expectations set for him across, you know, the first chunk of his NBA career. Now, why is that? It's kind of a multifaceted problem. So Jabari Smith Jr. actually came out of the gate really strong in his first preseason game with the Rockets, drilled a bunch of three-pointers against the San Antonio Spurs, looked exactly as advertised, and then unfortunately, he suffered an ankle injury in Rockets practice that sidelined him for the remainder of preseason. Then he came out and he made it, you know, back in time to the lineup for the season opener against the Atlanta Hawks, but he just, you know, he wasn't quite hitting the shots that you would normally expect for a shooter of his caliber to hit. And then over time, after, you know, that season opener and then a few more games go by, and you could tell that there was something off a little bit where the shots weren't going in, and he started to kind of get down on himself. And Jabari Smith Jr. is an incredibly confident individual, an incredibly confident young man, but at any point when you're missing that many shots and you're missing wide open looks that are being created by your teammates, eventually you're going to start to, you know, maybe second guess yourself. And that's exactly what happened. Is he started getting kind of hesitant with the shots that he was taking. He wasn't making good decisions on the basketball floor. And then couple that with the fact that he probably wasn't at quite 100% after recovering from that ankle injury, maybe came back not necessarily a little bit too soon, but was maybe playing at like 85-90% capacity. And that, you know, kind of adding to the fact that maybe he wasn't trusting his body to its fullest potential. Whereas now, over these last probably about 5 or 6 games or so, Jabari Smith Jr. looks like a completely night and day different player. He said recently in a post-game media availability after the Rockets' big win against the Atlanta Hawks the day after Thanksgiving that he finally has his legs back under him, and he is now exploding off the ground, skying for rebounds, rebounding at an incredible rate compared to the early part of the season where there were even some question marks about, hey, like, where's the rebounding? Where's the defensive intensity? Where's all the things that were kind of marketed as Jabari Smith Jr.'s strengths in the early going of this Rockets season? So it kind of feels like there was that stretch where he came back from injury, wasn't quite himself, maybe got down on himself a little bit because he wasn't making the shots that he's normally accustomed to making. And then there was like this weird curve in his like field goal attempts where he was shooting a lot of threes early on, and then it dipped where you could see like the confidence starting to wane, where it went from like 8 or 9 attempts per game down to like 3 or 4 attempts per game. And then over these last 5 or 6 games for the Rockets, it's going back up to where he's now attempting again 8, 9, 10, 11 threes per game because the confidence is now back. He's playing so much more aggressively. He's looking for his shot. He's letting it fly from long distance, and it's working well. The Rockets are riding a 2-game win streak now, picking up a win against the Atlanta Hawks right after Thanksgiving, and then a win on the second night of a back-to-back against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Both games where Jabari Smith Jr. was incredibly impactful in the rebounding department, had strong offensive nights, all of that. So he's starting to put it together. The game is maybe slowing down a little bit for him. And then on top of that, he's probably back to 100% where he can trust his body again. Again, saying he's got his legs under him, being able to really be that imposing physical presence, all 6'11" of him on the defensive side, making his presence felt in the rebounding department. All the things that he was advertised as being able to do during the pre-draft cycle is now kind of coming to fruition. So for anybody who labeled or was trying to label Jabari Smith Jr. a bust because of his struggles to kind of start the season, you don't grade a rookie on being a rookie, right? Rookies are going to have ups and downs, but it's nice to see him kind of starting to settle into his groove as an NBA player. Now, changing gears here a little bit to the Houston Rockets backcourt, from the number 3 overall pick in Jabari Smith Jr. to the number 2 overall pick from a couple summers ago, Jalen Green. Look, last season, Jalen Green proved that he was an absolute bucket. He went on a huge scoring tear to close the season. He was the only rookie last year to have a 40-point game. This year, he's been continuing that trend. He basically has had a really phenomenal year, apart from just, it was a a four-game stretch, a West Coast swing where the Rockets had a really brutal schedule, and Jalen really struggled during those four games out on the West Coast. But aside from that little pocket where he was in a shooting slump, he was really good before those games, and he's been really good since those games. In fact, in the 10 games since that West Coast swing, Jalen Green is averaging 24 points per game, about 4.5 rebounds per night, and 5.5 assists per game on 63% true shooting. And the thing that's really stood out about Jalen Green is he can score from anywhere on the floor. He can shoot threes. He can get it going in the mid-range. He can attack the rim. He's added some muscle to his frame this season. He added about 5 to 10 pounds of muscle this past offseason. And so now he's able to finish through contact a little bit better at the rim. He's getting to the free throw line at a better rate this year than he was last year, kind of not necessarily dealing with the rookie whistle anymore. But past all of that, because we knew that Jalen Green was a scorer, he is now facilitating at such a high level. And this wasn't something that was to be expected out of Jalen Green. You could see flashes of it last season, and when you looked at his tape with the G League, you thought, okay, he probably is going to be able to add some playmaking to his bag over time. But in my eyes, I thought, okay, 3 to 4 years from now, right? Something like that, something reasonable. But the way that he's added the playmaking so quickly just in his second year as a player for a guy who was basically projected to just be a bucket getter at the NBA level has been fantastic. He just had his career high in assists against the OKC Thunder, had 9 assists, which, you know, one more and he would have had his first career double-double with assists. But it's the way that he's learning how to facilitate where he's making life easier for his teammates by leveraging his scoring gravity and snaking through pick and rolls and finding the big man, you know, as they're rolling to the rim or you know, faking right at the cup and then getting the big man on his heels or faking out the defender to then set up his teammate for an easy look right at the rim. Understanding how to attack in transition and being unselfish with the basketball. And I think that's kind of the thing that sometimes these like bucket getting two guards, like the Jalen Greens, the Devin Bookers, the Bradley Beals of the world, they come out and they get maybe labeled unfairly because, you know, their primary skill is scoring. And especially if all you're doing is scoring on a bad team, then maybe people will look at it as like empty stats or empty calories as far as a player is concerned. But for Jalen, he's really made it a point to involve his teammates and to find ways to make guys around him better and to impact the game in ways besides just scoring, because he can score at will almost. He's got a lightning quick first step. Nobody can stay in front of him in the NBA. And now that he's able to get to the free throw line significantly more than he was his rookie year, he's almost unstoppable offensively. Adding the playmaking to that unlocks more for him, unlocks more for his teammates, because now rather than treating Jalen Green as a one-dimensional scoring threat, now you have to treat him as both a scoring threat and a threat to pass the ball and create for his teammates. And those two things kind of feed into each other to where now it's just opening up all these opportunities within the Rockets offense. And Jalen Green is now looking like one of the deadliest players offensively in the NBA if this trend continues. He's currently riding a streak right now where he's had 4 or more assists in the last 8 straight games as, you know, playing for the Rockets. And I mean, if that trend continues where he's able to, you know, average 4, 5, 6 some odd assists a game, as well as scoring at the rate he's currently at, which he's ranked 21st in the NBA in points per game as a sophomore, the sky's the limit for this guy. He's going to probably lead the NBA one day in scoring. And if the playmaking trend continues, he might also be somebody who's able to be a top assist guy as well further down the line. So for more on Jabari Smith Jr. and him settling into his NBA career and Jalen Green and his growth as a playmaker and as an offensive force in the NBA, be sure to check out Locked On Rockets. That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA Monday, the biggest stories with the local experts.